This is the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. You usually tune into this show for some sort of personal development, some sort of self-help hack. But this episode is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to give you my personal take on the coronavirus and the lockdown and the upcoming U.S. election. So enjoy this treat, this little change of pace. Buckle up. Let's go for a ride. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. So it's October 2020, which means we have been dealing with COVID-19, the coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, I don't know, lots of names for it, but we'll just call it COVID-19 from here on out. For 7 months, we've been dealing with this. The whole world has been dealing with COVID-19. Anytime you turn on the TV, you're getting bombarded with all types of information related to COVID-19. And let's not even get started about social media, whether you're on Facebook or Instagram or whatever the platform is. I know that there is a constant barrage of memes and clips and videos and experts and not experts. It's just been a lot going for 7 months. It was a few weeks ago, maybe even months ago. It's probably one of the effects of COVID-19. Time doesn't hold the same type of markers that it used to. So weeks, sometimes for me, seem like months. But I came across a response to COVID-19 from the one and only Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs. And I'm actually going to read it to you because I think it's that important, or at least it was something that resonated very much with me and the person that I am. So this is how Mike Rowe responded to somebody who left a comment or wrote into him based on his initial response to COVID-19. So here it goes. This is Darlene writing Mike Rowe, and she writes, "Mike, in a recent post, you said you've been to Tennessee and Georgia giving speeches and filming for your new show. Before that, you were on the road shooting for Dirty Jobs. Is it really so important to film a television show in the midst of pandemic? Is it responsible of you to encourage this kind of behavior when infection rates are spiking? Don't you watch the news? More and more cases every day. Aren't you concerned?" And it's signed Darlene Gibbon. And the date on this is July 22nd, 2020. So this is how Mr. Rowe responds to Darlene. He says, "Hi, Darlene. Of course I'm concerned. I'm just not petrified. On March 15th, the day after my part of the country was locked down, I posted a link to an interview with Dr. Michael Osterholm. I'm posting it again because I believe you and everyone else in the country would benefit from listening carefully to what he has to say." He then has a YouTube link there. I'll include it in the show notes too if you'd like. Continuing on, "Dr. Osterholm is the Director of Infectious Disease Research and Policy. This is the same epidemiologist who 10 years ago predicted a coronavirus would come from China and turn our country upside down. In his book, deadliest enemies, he described the utterly irresponsible way in which the media would report on the situation, the completely opportunistic and shamelessly political way our leaders would likely react, and the unprecedented chaos and confusion that would arise from all the mixed messages from the medical community. His resume is unexampled, and his analysis of the situation is the most logical and persuasive of any I've heard so far. He's also the only expert I know of who hasn't walked back his numbers, reconsidered his position, or moved the goalposts with regard to what we must do, what we can do, and what he expects to happen next. I say all this because Dr. Osterholm also predicted that we could easily see 100 million COVID cases in this country, with a very strong possibility of 480,000 fatalities, even if we successfully flatten the curve. It took me a few weeks to accept this scenario because 480,000 fatalities is a frightening number, and a lot of other experts were saying lots of conflicting things. But eventually I came to the conclusion that Dr. Osterholm was probably correct and quickly navigated the four stages of grief that usually precede acceptance, denial, anger, bargaining, and depression. By late April, I had come to accept Dr. Osterholm's predictions as a matter of fact. Since then, I've had 3 full months to come to terms with the fact that A, I'm probably going to get COVID-19 at some point. B, I am almost certainly going to survive it. And C, I might very well give it to someone else. I hope that doesn't sound blasé or glib or fatalistic or selfish. 480,000 deaths is an obvious tragedy, and I'm deeply sympathetic to all who have been impacted thus far. I'm also very concerned for my parents and everyone else in a high-risk category. But when Dr. Osterholm says that COVID can be slowed but not stopped, I believe him. When he says a vaccine will not necessarily hasten herd immunity, I believe him. And when he says that flattening the curve and eliminating the virus have nothing to do with each other, I believe him. Thus, for the last 3 months, I've been operating from the assumption that this is a year-round virus that's eventually going to infect 100 million people and kill roughly 0.5% of those infected. I've gotten used to those numbers in much the same way. I've gotten used to the fact that 40,000 people will likely die on the highways this year. That's why I'm not panicked or surprised by tens of thousands of daily COVID cases. I've been expecting them. Unfortunately, many others have not. Every day, millions of people watch the same breathless coverage by the same breathless journalists who seem determined to do all they can to foster uncertainty. And so, millions of people are still paralyzed by fear because they haven't been given a chance to digest the truth, or what I believe to be the truth. Fact is, we can accept almost anything if we're given the facts and enough time to get our heads around them. But if we don't have an understanding of what's really happening, we simply can't get past denial and bargaining, where so many seem to be stuck, understandably so. Imagine for a moment you had no idea how many people would die in car accidents this year. Now imagine every single accident, over 6 million a year in the U.S. alone, were reported on the same way that every new COVID case is reported today. Imagine every day you were told in hysterical tones that another 16,000 accidents had occurred, resulting in another 90 deaths per day. What would that do to your willingness to drive? 6 million accidents is a lot of accidents, and 40,000 annual fatalities is a lot of death, especially if you don't know how high that number could get. But we do know the dangers of driving, and we accept those numbers. Consequently, we're able to make grown-up decisions about whether or not we want to assume the associated risk of operating a motor vehicle. Again, don't misunderstand. I'm not ignoring COVID, and I'm not pretending the risks at hand aren't real. I don't want to get this disease and give it to someone else any more than I want to be in a car wreck and hurt someone else. So I take precautions. I get tested often. If I can't distance, I wear a mask, especially around higher-risk people. I also wear a seatbelt, obey the speed limits, and check my mirrors before changing lanes. I'm aware that we'd all be a lot safer if we kept our cars in the garage. I'm also aware that we'd be a lot safer if we all kept ourselves in the house. but that's not why cars or people exist. Anyway, darling, that's a long way of saying that I have accepted Dr. Alsterholm's numbers, and now, after 3 months of acceptance, I've made a decision on how I wish to live my life. Sooner or later, you will too. We all will. Signed, Mike. P.S. My foundation is selling masks to raise money for our next Worth Ethic Scholarship Program. They're going fast. And he leaves the link for where you can pick up those masks if you would like to buy one from Mr. Rowe. So that was written in July. We're about 3 months beyond that now. And some of the numbers that he quoted from Dr. Osterholm are fairly on target, although we do know that the U.S. hit 2 million cases, and which was double than the 100 million. And so that just kind of gives you an idea of where we're at with that. I also saw a stat today that says on average we lose about 2.8 million people to some cause of death every year in the U.S. And with October, November, December left in the month or the year of 2020, we're at about 2 million deaths. So it doesn't look like the death rate in the U.S. for 2020 is going to look much different than the death rate for 2019, COVID or not, if that makes sense. So unless COVID can take out another 500,000 people between now and the end of the year, we'll have the same amount of death that has occurred in 2020 that would have occurred on average in any other year. And that was just a stat that really stood out to me. And I don't want to argue the nitty-gritty stats, though, in this talk necessarily. And I have done it to a certain degree. I do take exception when people say we need to trust the scientists. And if you're not a scientist, then you have no business questioning the numbers or the methods. I don't believe that. I think that if you have a semblance of logic, you know, critical thinking, you have the ability to reason, then you should be absolutely questioning the numbers. You should be asking about the methods. Don't let them pull the leave science to scientists and just believe it. Don't let them pull that. That's what they used to do before people could read, right? I mean, that was the way to hold the masses down, was you'd write it down in the book and point to the book and say, it says in there. And because they couldn't read it, then they were, you know, forced to believe it. You know, they didn't really have a choice. Same thing's being done right now with, I'm going to air quote, science. And again, as I'm not a science denier, I believe in science. I have a PhD in a social science. I've taken high level statistics courses. I had to hand calculate my own statistics for my doctoral dissertation. So it's not that I'm anti-science. However, I do know enough about science and about statistics and about false positives and about bias in research to be highly skeptical of most any research that comes out, at least to the extent that I can look at it and see were the methods pure, was the intent pure, how well was bias bracketed or checked or eliminated. Those are things that I get to do because of my education and my training and my experience. And I got to tell you, when I look at the COVID numbers for what they are and the methods and how they're being published and presented, there's a lot of things that make me question what's really going on and what is the agenda behind the way that these numbers are being collected, looked at, and ultimately put back to the public for consumption. There's just a lot of things that really don't add up. They don't make a whole lot of sense. And I'll add to it that I've been working this entire time as an essential worker, and I have been working with lots of people, and I've seen positive COVID cases, and I've seen how our health authority in the state that I'm in has literally changed how we are supposed to respond to these positive cases in terms of our contact tracing, in terms of what a quarantine time would look like, in terms of what type of personal protective equipment is necessary. It's changed. It's changed so much. And it's just mind-boggling that this is the way the experts are in control and how they have authority, and they're directing everyday people, essential workers, people that are, I know people that it still are basically at home. They haven't left. Or if they have left, it hasn't been for very long and very frequent. So there's people that are still very, very scared about COVID-19. And a lot of it has to do with how the numbers and the stats are being put back out for public consumption. But I digress. I don't want to get into that necessarily. What I think the numbers do show us is that COVID-19 has a high infectious rate, meaning lots of people have turned out positive for COVID-19. And luckily, a very small percentage of people have actually died from COVID-19. Very small. For age groups 70 and younger, it's less than 1%. So lots of people are contracting COVID-19. Not many people are dying from it. And like Mr. Rowe says, I don't say that to negate anybody who might be listening to this or is going to listen to this and has had family members that have died from COVID-19. I have had family members that have died from COVID-19 down in Mexico. So I'm not part of those included statistics. And the same way, I wouldn't downplay or, you know, bemoan or bescreech somebody who died in a car wreck, because that's tragic as well. So what I'm ultimately concerned about is what enduring impact will the lockdown have on us, on our economy, on small business owners, on kids, my kids included, that are being relegated to distance learning, online education, whatever you want to call it. And I just don't see how if you actually look at what they're doing, because my wife sees it every day, I see it when I'm around, they're not learning. They're not being educated. They will be behind comparatively. They'll be behind other states who aren't forcing families and kids to choose online school, because there's some states that are going to live school, other countries that are handling this differently. And I can tell you that the kids that are doing online school for the greater good, they're going to be behind academically. We're a sports family, and there's other states that are allowing fall sports to happen. We're in a state where virtually no fall sports are happening. So if you're an athlete, you will be behind, because you're not getting that practice experience. You're not getting that in-game experience and all the confidence that comes from in-game experience. So your athletes will be behind. And those are the things, that's just a couple categories of factors that, you know, as much as we're trying to predict, you know, how many deaths are going to come from COVID and what's the R naught and all these things that are related to virus and pandemic. Is anybody talking about what is the long-term impact of the lockdown going to be? We're seeing spikes in suicide, although I will say I haven't looked at the numbers. I'm just going by what I'm hearing. Mental illness is on the rise, apparently. Child abuse reports are on the rise. Domestic violence is on the rise. I know that divorce is on the rise because I've seen it all around me with couples that have been cooped up with each other and they're calling it quits. And I can't help to think that COVID's playing a role in that. But I want to get back to one of the things that Mike Rowe said in that letter to Darlene, and he said, this isn't why people exist. People don't exist to be holed up in their homes and their apartments and, you know, their domiciles, whatever they call home. That's not why people exist. So when I read that, I thought, yep, he's right. So why do people exist? Well, people exist to connect with other people. And there's only so much that you can do that through Zoom or through Skype or through whatever you're using to virtually connect with people, yes, that helps. It's a big support. It does help take the edge off of it, but there's only so much that you can do virtually. People exist to connect with other people, to be with other people, to be in the same space with other people. That's a big reason of why people exist. I know there's a lot of people that are living in fear, and I think a lot of that fear comes from people not knowing why they exist. So here's my question. If you're listening to this, why do you exist? I know why I exist. Not to say that I always have it figured out, but I've always had a pretty good idea. And there's been a lot of time in my life where I wasn't living true to my understanding of why I exist. This is going to link back to one of my earlier podcasts, and the work that I do whenever I'm working with somebody is figuring out your core values. Why do you exist? What makes your core values, what makes them important to you? And this is where, when I hear the fear that comes from, you know, the response from all kinds of people about masks versus no fat masks. Should restaurants be open? Should bars be open? Should schools be open? And the people that are saying, no, they shouldn't. And the fear I hear from them, I wonder if they know who they are. I wonder if they know what their values are, their core values. And here's the thing. If somebody were to say something like this, look, we need to wear masks. We need to stay home. We need to social distance. We need to shut down schools. We need to do all these things to minimize person-to-person contact, because damn it, I know who I am and my mission is not fulfilled on this earth in through my life, and if I go early, it's going to cut off what I know I'm supposed to be here to do with my life. Now, if I heard people say that, I could probably accept their fear about catching COVID and then dying early, because they feel like they're on mission and COVID is a threat to their mission. I could probably accept that, but I don't hear that from the people who just blanketly say, stay home, wear a mask, don't be around other people. How dare you if you aren't doing those things? The tone of you don't believe in science if you're not wearing a mask and if you're just going out to do things that aren't quote unquote essential. I don't hear those people talking about their mission and their purpose of their life and how COVID-19 is a potential threat to that. And if I did, I could probably accept their fear, and I could probably accept their vitriol when it comes to how we're supposed to be responding to the pandemic from their view. I don't know if it's a Stoic that said it. It might've been Marcus Aurelius. I'll have to go check it out and find out, fact check myself. But the Stoics say that the day that you will die is set in stone on the day that you're born. And there's nothing that you can do about it. There's nothing that you can do to change or extend that or prolong that or avoid it. And I really had that embrace with COVID-19, especially as I was accepting my role as an essential employee. Again, in March and April, it was crazy. We didn't know what we were to expect. We only got the bits and pieces that we knew coming from China and what it was doing over there. And I got to tell you, it was scary. And I was prepared for a doomsday, you know, worst case scenario. And as we made preparations at work and we altered our normal way of doing business, you know, the first couple positive cases that rolled in, you know, they were quite alarming. And overall, though, what I have seen in my place of work as an essential employee did not stack up to the portrayals that we saw through the media. It wasn't anything like we saw in Italy. It wasn't anything like we saw in New York or LA or Seattle, some of the bigger cities, New Orleans, where, you know, COVID really came in and ravaged it. And again, I'm not there. I only saw what was put through, you know, clips on television news and YouTube about what those ERs and whatnot look like in terms of being overwhelmed, and that those were scary sights. However, where I'm at, that never materialized. And there's a lot of places in the U.S. where that never materialized. Yet I'm in a state where we still have some of the most stringent lockdown edicts in place, decrees by the governor. Yet my state overall doesn't look anything like New York, in New York City, California, in L.A., Washington, and Seattle. Yet the way that we're locked down is way tighter than some of those other places. So again, that's where I'm like, it doesn't add up for me. But I did decide once COVID was a reality that I was going to embrace my role as an essential worker. And if COVID took me, then COVID's going to take me. And I would live my days out on mission, doing what I believe was my purpose for being here on this earth. And was it perfect? No. Was there problems? Yeah. Did I have to rethink and step back and accept some hard feedback? You bet I did. At the same time, I wasn't going to live in fear of COVID. Now, at the same time, do I think it's smart, you know, the reports, or do I support or encourage the reports of, you know, what was Florida when the beaches reopened several months ago and just everybody flocked there and there was a bunch of, you know, 20-somethings and teens that were out there in great big bunches and then you saw the COVID cases spike? No, I don't think that's smart. I don't think that's smart at all. Do I think it's smart that, you know, people are going back to bars and returning to kind of, you know, frolicking drunk bar behavior? No, I don't think that's smart either. However, I don't think there's anything wrong with going to the grocery store just because you want to or just because you need to. I don't think there's anything wrong with going out to eat at a restaurant. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing the, you know, these things that are as normal as possible. I think my kids should be in school, in life school. I said it. I really do. I think that the pros are not going to outweigh the cons. And again, some people say, well, what good is education if your kid is dead? Very true, right? The smartest dead kid, you know, probably doesn't have much on the least smart alive kid. So I'll grant you that one. But at the same time, like I said earlier, in this little monologue, is anybody thinking about the long-term consequences of lockdown and forcing kids to be on school via online platforms? Is anybody thinking about it? You want to talk about the equity gap, because that's something that's a huge conversation right now. This is only serving to widen the equity gap. Tremendously, it will widen the equity gap. If you got just even two parent households where both parents have to work, and who's watching those kids? Who's facilitating education for those kids? Who is troubleshooting the electronics for those kids? Who is making sure the kids are awake and in front of their computer screens during their class times? When their online portals don't work, who's sending the messages to the school and to school IT? Who's doing that in a two-parent home when both parents are at work? Online school, the lockdown, is going to significantly widen the equity gap. And there's no way around it. Things like the pandemic, COVID-19, they all fit in a category. And they fit in a category of things that have happened in the past that we're in the midst of right now and will continue to happen in the future, right? The economy crash of 2008, very much the same thing categorically, where something happened that's outside of the control of the individual person that has catastrophic impact on all sorts of things, the economy included, and the negative outcomes are widespread and reaching. So for me, COVID-19 is akin to the 2008 crash of the economy. COVID-19 is likely similar to the experience when the major world wars broke out. And I know that Spanish flu in, you know, the 1918 came on the heels of World War One. So I'm, you know, I'm not denying that the World War One was partly responsible for the spread of the Spanish flu too. But these are things that happen. They're outside of our control and they're going to happen again. And how do we respond to those things? So what are we going to learn from this COVID-19 experience? And what I want to urge you to do is, again, figure out who you are, figure out what your mission is, figure out how you can stay on mission in a situation where COVID-19 is the reality. How do you do that? And how do you stay on mission and then be able to support other people who also are making a choice, a values-based choice to stay on mission, and their behavior looks different than yours? Can you accept that? Can you be okay with that? Because I see a lot of people not being okay with how other people are choosing to respond to COVID-19. And I think a lot of it comes from fear. And I think a lot of it comes from people not knowing who they are and what their personal mission is. So that's my personal take on COVID-19, the pandemic, and the lockdown. I hope it was fun for you to get a little bit of insight on how I think about these things for me personally. Again, I'm in contact both virtually and in person with all types of people that have all different responses and reactions and thoughts about COVID-19. And I'm not saying my way is the correct way or the right way, but I wanted to explain it so that way when you see other people who maybe have a different idea or thought, at least you will have heard the structure of my thinking around pandemic, COVID-19, and the lockdown. So we're going to move on to the second topic, which is the election, the U.S. election. In about a month, or less than a month now, the election will have happened and we will have the outcome of that, and either Donald Trump will get a second term or we will be swearing in Joe Biden as the president of the United States. So what is the upgraded life? What does Dr. Nick Sotelo think about this election or any election? And I think any election probably is a better way of me explaining it. So I personally don't believe that the individual who bestows the title President of the United States has much bearing on me and my life, has much bearing on my mission. Similar topics, COVID, pandemic, U.S. elections, outcome. I don't think they have much bearing on how I'm going to live my life. And if my person doesn't win, that's not going to stall much out for me. And just because the other person who's on team other side wins, yeah, you know, I might be disappointed, but I'm definitely not going to let that take up any more space than necessary in my head. Now, the founding fathers did an incredible job in creating our system here in the U.S. to build in all sorts of checks and balances. That's why we have the different branches of government. That's why, you know, the State Department, usually the head of the State Department carries over through the election. So if you really want to know who's pulling the strings in the U.S., look at the State Department, right? Because they're the ones with the staff and the momentum and the direction that usually carries over from one presidency to the next. So yes, you know, the presidency gets a lot of fanfare, gets a lot of buzz. It's sexy to push out in the media, in the news, in social media. But I just don't think it has that much bearing on your individual life or my individual life. And I think that the elections that get closer and closer to where you live, yeah, I can see that maybe those people in when one type of person versus the other gets elected, that might have more of a specific influence on your direct life. But even then, I really question that. So because of that, I don't get wrapped up into elevating this person as an automatic model for who I should be as a person. And that's where I feel like a lot of people get hung up around this, that, you know, the president, yes, and I believe a president should be stately. And do I think that Donald Trump is carried away with social media? Absolutely. Absolutely. But whoever assumes that position in my life, it's not somebody that, you know, I'm like, oh, am I going to dress like Donald Trump? Am I going to talk like he does? Or am I going to, you know, handle business deals like he does? No, I'm not, because I'm me and he's him. So I just don't look at the president as somebody who I'm automatically going to model myself after as a person. Now, again, I think there has to be respect for the office. And I do believe that there's been some problems with how President Trump has chosen to go about things in terms of the way that he chooses particular language, the way that he, you know, addresses heads of other state. I just heard today he dropped the F-bomb in reference to Iran. And here's the thing, though. We knew that about him before he even turned up on the ballot. Well, I don't know what else we expected from the man. And I do believe that the man came in with a definite idea of how to do the job. And I don't see him straying much from that at all. So I don't know what else we expected. It'll be really interesting to see what happens, you know, that first week in November when the results are in and we are either devastated because Donald Trump is going to get a second term, or we're elated because Trump is out and we have Joe Biden. It'll be really interesting. And I'm really going to be concerned about how we respond to that as a citizenry. You know, will there be more riots and protests? Will there be more damage done to, you know, our streets and our cities? The major city in my area, you know, has just been thrashed for several months straight, over 100+ days of protests. And unfortunately, there's been ugliness that has been contained in those protests. And I just can't help but think it's going to ramp up post-election, no matter who wins. You know, when this country was formed after the revolution, after we fought off the British and declared our independence, you know, they wanted to call George Washington king, and they wanted him to reign forever. And he rejected both of those things. He says, don't call me king. And I didn't even want to be a president, but I guess I was a general in the army, so I guess that makes sense. But I definitely don't want to do this any more than I have to. And that, to me, speaks to the regard that we should have towards government in general, meaning we should have a certain degree of disdain for government. We should have a healthy degree of distrust of the government. And for a lot of different reasons and a lot of different things, we have convinced a huge swath of our citizenry to need government, to depend on government for all sorts of things, not just material goods that are necessary for survival. But I also think we have this co-opting of our moral and ethical compasses on behalf of who we think should be in office and looking up to those people that are in office. When I mean, you look at the way that the Founding Fathers wrote about government and wrote about the English government and why they were doing what they did in terms of breaking away, that's where that, you know, that disdain for government and disdain for the idea that when we elect people to office, that we do so with the idea that they should be able to tell us how to live our lives and how to do things with our commerce, whether we agree with it or not. I wish we could go back and kind of adopt that healthy disdain for all things government. And that's just where I am personally with the presidency, with this election. Look, I was born in the 70s, and by my rough count right here off the top of my head, that means I have been alive under at least 7 different presidencies. And again, I just can't, I don't reflect on my years. I'm 43 years old, and I really don't think of one day that I've really reflected and said, man, if only that other person had been president, my life would be fill in the blank. It's just not how I operate. It's not how I see the office. And there's been presidents that I really didn't appreciate that have been in office. And again, it really didn't take up a ton of headspace for me. Your life must move forward regardless of who the president is. There's things that you can control and things that you can't control. And yes, you can vote. However, ultimately, whoever ends up as the president, you don't have a ton of control over that. So how much headspace are you going to give it? How much heart space are you going to give it? How much of your soul are you going to let be chewed away if your person doesn't end up winning the election? And I would urge you to limit that as much as possible. Build up your resilience. Know who you are. Know what your values are. Keep on mission. And figure out ways to stay on mission regardless of who ends up winning the election. And really, that's my best advice for you. That's what I do for myself. That's what I model for my friends and family. The election is what the election is. The outcome of it, although you may have an individual desire for a specific outcome, it may not happen. And what are you going to do then? Don't let your life stall out just because your person doesn't get elected. Don't give it any more headspace than that's than absolutely necessary. And for me, it's not very much headspace at all given to being upset or being sore or having ill will towards somebody who maybe I don't particularly appreciate becoming the president. All right, I'm going to stop there. Again, I hope this was fun. It was fun for me, but I hope for you as my audience, get a different look at who I am, the voice behind the microphone, Dr. Nick Sotelo, The Upgraded Life. If this episode was something that you appreciated, let me know in a comment. Hit me up on social media. I'm over on Instagram. I'd love to get some more Instagram followers. The Upgraded Life on Instagram. You'll see the podcast art there to know it's the right account. If this was a fun episode for you, let me know. And maybe I'll do some more. Maybe I'll do some more topics according to Dr. Nick Sotelo that are more about what's going on in this world around us. Just lots of things that I would be able to get behind this microphone and talk more about. So, all right. If this wasn't your thing, I apologize, but I had to do it. And you can let me know that it wasn't your thing also in a comment. Either way, whether you liked it or whether you didn't, let me know on social media. Let me know on a review on Apple Podcasts. As always, head over there, give a 5-star review to the show. I'm trying to get 200 5-star reviews with written reviews by the first quarter of 2021. So help me with that goal. You can find show notes. You can find the article that I read from Mike Rowe in the show notes. So if you want to see that and read over it again for yourself. I'll put it there. And my website is www.nicksotelo.com, and you'll be able to see the link to my podcast from there. I also have a website called www.theupgradedlifepodcast.com that's just specifically dedicated to my podcast. It's up. It's not complete yet. It's not perfect, but it is good enough to say it over the microphone and point you towards it. I'll end it there. This is Dr. Nick Sotelo, the Upgraded Life Podcast, urging you to do something today based on what you've heard from me to upgrade your mindset, realize and reach your potential, and stay on mission.